headed back in. Turned in! A second of the game for Van Veen, and he is loving it. Cornelius on the edge of the ball. Oh, wow! How special is that for his first Motherwell goal? For Slattery, and he shot away! It's a fantastic strike! And it's thundered in by Liam Grimshaw! What a moment for him! The fans' favourite!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Well, we've been away for a couple of weeks and there's been plenty happening, to say the least. I'm joined tonight by Pepe to talk over the last four or five games, where we go from here. We're in a bit of a low spot after last night's defeat against Ross County. And it's still 2022, we're at the 3rd of March and we've not won a game. So, how are you doing, mate? And it's in a league game, I suppose. We've won two cup games, but it's not a great frame of mind to be in ahead of recording here.
No, after last night, certainly, you can't really bend but negative, can you? But other than that, everything's all good. But football, it's a funny game. The feeling that you're coming out of beating Aberdeen in the Cup seems to be such a long time ago. It's depressing to watch us at the moment.
Yeah, so since we last recorded, we've had a 2-0 defeat at Tannadice against Dundee United. We followed that up with a 2-1 victory over Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup. Following week, we played Aberdeen again in the league and it finished 1-1. After that, a brilliant comeback against Rangers to draw 2-2 after being 2-0 down at half-time. And then last night, a 1-0 defeat against Ross County. Let's start with the here and now, the defeat last night. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we last recorded that Ross County looked like a team that were almost pushing in towards the top six and were a bit of a threat. They certainly are in the mix now. Every team from 10th up to 4th are all in that fight. And we're just not picking up results in the league. We went into that game last night on the high of drawing with Rangers. It was a very big point, especially given that Hibs had drawn with Celtic earlier on in the day. And then to make such sweeping changes to the team, I think that one's on the manager. And the performance itself, I wasn't at the game last night. I've had the misfortune of watching it back. It was very feeble the way that we lost the game. I didn't really feel that we made a great deal of chances, offered much of a threat. We went down with a whimper, basically.
It was absolutely awful last night. Now, don't get me wrong, there was chances here that we could have come back into the game, particularly Conor Shields' chance. The only player that, well, Liam Kelly, didn't really have a great deal to do, but we did. It was his usual kind of consistent self. Obviously, nearly scoring at the end as well. I thought Woolrey was the only player that got above 5 out of 10. He looked as if he was lively and wanted to go on the ball, but I feel as if I've been really positive about the squad, and I've been quite critical of people's kind of a perception of Stephen O'Donnell with the captain and stuff like that. I thought his performance last night was awful. There was times where I thought, well, I just want to get rid of the ball. I don't know whether I thought Ross County were good or were just really bad. What I would say is I felt as if Ross County were more up for it. Every time that we were, they were first to every second ball. Every time we were on the ball, they had somebody, every single one of their players wanted to win the ball back. It was just dreadful. Getting into, as you usually do, you get into the time now where you're thinking, like, what's the wholesale change is going to be this week? But this week I actually thought, surely, what he'll do is he'll keep the team the same as what the second half of Rangers was, albeit the performance maybe wasn't great, and Rangers and another day might have won with certain decisions going in their favour. But at the end of the day, we've made all these changes. Now, one of the things two points on it that I think we should discuss further is that our left-hand side is absolutely shocking. For the first game of the season, Paul McGinn had the running of that right-hand side, running to the left-back, and noticed that for the first season. I would love to see a stat about how many goals we've lost for the left-hand side. The second one is, we've signed McGabby in a long-term contract recently, and Ricky Lamy signed for Dundee. Now, for me, I think Ricky Lamy's done well this season, and I don't think that he is definitely, he's definitely not to blame for the circumstances. He's done what's right for him. But for me, I don't see why Ricky Lamy should be starting games. For example, we're playing Dundee on Saturday. Would you expect him to play on Saturday? Because I certainly don't.
I completely agree. In terms of, I think that it sends out a bad message to those that are already at the club as well.
I was just shocked that, I mean, is he going to think, right, even if Ricky Lamy, say, puts another extra 10% in, that's when he can leave a challenge and give away a penalty, because he's trying to get Ross County to get back into that lower position in the league. Now, people listening, are you right? But that's the way that I think. I'm talking about Ross County last night. What's his mindset? It's like he's more interested in trying to get Dundee back into the relegation. But certainly, I would never ever even think about playing him against Dundee. So surely you would want your two centre halves. You want consistency in that team. So if he plays against Dundee again, he's going to have split loyalty. Going forward into the season, you want Oyara. He seems to feel right out of the picture. But that's another point about the manager. He seems to have wee spells of players that are almost his favourites. Slattery seemed to be the start of the season. I don't think Slattery's done much wrong. He seems to be cast away now. Grimshaw was it for a while. He's not even making the bench. So there just doesn't seem to be any consistency on the park and off it.
I'm really frustrated by... See, the team last night, for me, I think it was an absolute shambles, to put it bluntly, that Dean Cornelius missed out. I thought Dean Cornelius had an absolutely superb game at Ibrox, and he seems to be the fall guy time and time again with Graham Alexander, where he comes in, he performs well, and then just dropped the next week. And it would be really unfair and really kind of building him up to a point where the hysteria and the hype would be too much. But for me, we should be kind of moulding him into a Alan Campbell type vein, where he's a local guy that's come through the youth ranks. He's come into the first team and he's done well. So give the guy his chance. You've then got likes of Lamy coming back in. Now, Lamy wasn't a consistent player or a consistent pick for Graham Alexander during the early parts of the season when he was a Motherwell player and he was going to be a Motherwell player for the foreseeable. To then start bringing him back in and making wholesale changes to your team, a team that would have been buoyed by the fact they came back in the second half against Rangers, I can't put my finger on it. I think time and time again we've accused Graham Alexander of not knowing his strongest team. We've made jokes about the fact that it almost feels like his team was into a tombola, and what happens after that is anybody's guess. But I now question whether this guy is the right fit for the club at all, because the style of football is horrendous. The team selection is controversial at the very least. You're going to go away from Fir Park these days happy that you've got a result, or if you lose or draw, you know you've not played well. I would say the only one exception to that was the Aberdeen 1-1 game, where I thought we played well enough to win the game. But he's not getting it right. And the sweeping changes, and I saw someone pointing out on Twitter that three times this season we have subbed a sub. Circumstances played a part in the game against Hibs where Ross Tierney came off, but I just don't, I don't see where we're going. There's no vision. If we rewind back to December 2020 and where we were when Stephen Robinson left, everyone seems to be quite unanimous in the fact that Stephen Robinson had taken us as far as we could go. Has Graham Alexander advanced us? His win percentage would maybe say yes. Everything else to me would say no. And I cannot see the direction this club is going in at this moment in time.
No, I think it's, if you rewind back maybe two or three podcasts when, or maybe even just before Christmas, you look at, he's winning Manager of the Month awards, and we're really happy that he's signed a new contract. And I think at the time it was linked to be the Preston job, and I actually said it won't be too long until he's getting linked to other jobs. So we were obviously happy enough, probably. I was probably more convinced than some. But now, over the last, this shows you how quickly you can change. And another thing that frustrates me is the substitutions. Last night, he went all out attack, and we had numerous strikers on. But what I said, I don't want to dwell on this whole Tony Watt situation, I really don't. But what I was talking to my son tonight, and I said, if Motherwell had sold Liam Kelly in the January transfer window, there's nobody would have expected Scott Fox to remain in goal for the remainder of the season. We would need to have signed another keeper, whether that's one for down south, whether it's an older head, or whether it's a foreign keeper, but somebody who's going to pick him in and be your number one. Now, if you sell your top goal scorer and probably going to be your player of the year, and you replace him with somebody who's been on the bench for the remainder of the majority of the season, and Jordan Roberts, and you then sign Joe Efford. Now, I'm not saying it's Joe Efford or Jordan Roberts' fault, the predicament that we find ourselves in, but they're not number nine strikers, which I've said. The only number nine striker that we have is Kevin Van Veen, and I think he needs somebody alongside him who is almost like a kind of Dougie Arnott type player, or a big strong guy who's going to knock the ball down to him, and we don't have that. And I just feel the recruitment in that side has been wrong. And I've already emphasised that my lack of concern, the lack of concern for the management, that the left side doesn't seem to be a problem. And we've signed Nathan McGinley in a relatively speaking long-term contract. Now, I'm not going to jump on. I think Nathan McGinley has been really, 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 really poor. But is Jake Carroll any better? I don't think so. We've said there's always a penalty in Jake Carroll. I had a penalty last night. I've not looked back at it because I can't be asked watching that draws back. Well, fair play to you for doing that. But for the majority of people that have seen it back say it wasn't a penalty.
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think the foul continues into the box, and I'm not sure what the guidelines on that are. And the only reason I watched it back was because I hadn't watched it initially, to be fair, and just kind of trying to come on here and offer my views on something I hadn't seen wouldn't have been right to do. But I want to kind of ask you something about what you've been talking about there. Is the recruitment a problem? I'm kind of unsure as to how we're operating in that sense. I know that football has changed so massively over the years, and the way that you don't get a guy in trial for a couple of weeks and see if he could cut the mustard and then go and sign him. But we seem to be almost kind of blindfoldedly bringing guys in and just seeing if it'll work or not. There's been countless examples over the years of guys that just haven't played any football. And I mean, from 2019, I'm not going back many, many years. I'll go and mention the likes of Casper Sloth, Michael Parker. We signed the boy, I'm a Loser, who came on against Rangers at the weekend, and I thought he was fairly decent. He's just completely out of the picture last night. You've got the boy that we've signed that had done the world tour, signed in January. And it's not as if we're signing players to go into the squad. We're signing guys as it's almost a numbers game type thing, if you know what I mean.
Go back to last season as well, and you've got the likes of Eddie Nolan.
There's another one Alexa's telling me it's World Book Deal. Alexa, be quiet.
You need to leave that.
I'm very distracted now. Eddie Nolan, another good example, but it's people that are coming in and not kicking a ball. To be fair, you could actually say the same with the boy who scored against Ross County in the last day of last season that moved on, the boy from St. Martin. I just don't understand why you're bringing these guys in.
I think for an extent, he was given a wee bit of leeway with regards to the recruitment. And we actually, if you remember back, we actually asked Alan Burrows at the time, were these signings kind of already in place for him coming in January? Was it players at Robinson and Martin Foyle had looked at, and he kind of alluded to that, and then lo and behold, the new recruitment team were put in place. But I have to tend to agree with you now. My concern is our attacking side. It's almost as if we're going down, trying to be down the Liverpool route, where we don't have a recognised number 9. You only get away with that if you've got players like Sadio Mane, Mo Salah, Diogo Jota, Bobby Firmino, whatever. You're not going to get that with Justin Amoruso, Kane Woolery, and Jordan Roberts, who for me are almost carbon copies of one another. Shields, for me, last night, should have scored. Yes, it was a ball hit across, and that could have went anywhere. But I feel as if I'm saying that more often than Shields has scored. The one up at Dundee, the one against Aberdeen, and that chance they had early in the second half last night. So for me, the real issue is, in the forward areas, we've not signed, but the recruitment has been wrong there. I've been one of Graham Alexander's biggest supporters, and again, it will sound as if I'm sitting on the fence, but I'm not completely against him as yet. But the concerning thing is, we're given, like, Kane Willoughby's been good in the last couple of games, but I mean, he's in a 3-year deal. Slattery seems to fell out the picture. So we're saying that there's not going to be wholesale changes in the summer. And for me, that's a concern, that there's not going to be wholesale changes in the summer, because I think it's needed. The weakest left backs that we've had in a long time are both got another year and one's got 2 years. So for me, there is, alarm bells are now starting to ring for me. I'm not calling for the manager's head, but I'll tell you what, see if we could beat with Dundee on Saturday. There will be a few people calling on it. I can guarantee you that.
I tend to kind of think of myself as someone that's quite balanced, and I've also got a wee bit of I've almost kind of a sense of having to be a bit impartial because that I'm involved in a few projects within the club. But see if the news broke earlier on today that Alexander had been removed to his position, I've got to admit, I wouldn't have been disappointed. Now, I looked up his record, and he's right up there with the post-war managers in terms of his win percentage is 40.9% last time I looked. Very, very strong as a Motherwell manager. But it's a progression thing. Again and again, I can't stop thinking about it in terms of I don't think that we're moving in the right direction whatsoever. There's been a lot of talk about the fact that the Premiership this season is a weaker league. Again, I'm not 100% sure that's the case. I just think that Rangers and Celtic are very, very strong. Hearts are a good side, and the rest of us are all much of a muchness. And we'll have many seasons where Muggle will finish 8th, 9th, and we'll be a wee bit kind of, oh, well, at least we can move on to next season and some fresh faces and everything will be all right. I feel that we're no further forward from when we were in a dogfight this time last year. We've got a manager that they got the basis of a very promising season in place prior to the winter break. We've come back. We're now, what, 11, 12 games in. We've won 2 cup ties. We've not managed to win in the league. It's not good enough that you can dress it up whatever way you like, and results like the one that we got at Ibrox were very, very impressive. But results on the whole aren't good enough. You look at the last 6 games forum table, Muddle were bottom. And if the league is in the state that we believe it is, or people are saying, oh, the teams are so, so poor, well, we're bottom of that. So are we the worst team in the league as it stands in 2022? We can't argue otherwise because our results tell you that we are.
See, another point, though, is, Andy, is that even when we went on our run, there was a lot of games where we were absolutely shite. See, if you look back to the
Ross County at home, Dundee at home.
Like. Yep. That's what I mean. So things can get brushed under the carpet. You can bring as many analogies, people over the cracks or whatever, right? We got lucky. Now, again, I don't want to dwell on Tony Watt, but he was pivotal to that and he could score a goal if you look even at getting the result against Hibs. I just think we're lacking that. And I go back to saying what I said. You're right. Is the recruitment wrong? I think we 100% got it wrong in January. Now, for me, Joe Effort, it's not his fault. Do I think that he's a type of player that we needed at that time? I've not seen enough of him to make that decision. I don't know what position he plays. I don't know what position any of the front three other than Van Veen plays. I don't know what their favourite position is. I would say probably Ken Woolery's favourable to the right. I would say they're all more favourable to the right hand side. But they're also similar. That's what I'm trying to get at, is that when you lose a player in any position that's been pivotal, played every game, every minute of every game of that season, you're maybe not going to get a like for like, but you're at least going to get somebody similar. I mean, I've done that. If you look at what Tony Watt had said when he left the club, and obviously there's been a bit of bitterness since the game at Tannadice. He said if you take away his contribution, Muller probably wouldn't have been 4th. And he got absolutely ridiculed for it through Motherwell fans, including myself. But on reflection, was he that far wrong? I'm not going to say that I agree with him. But maybe he's got a better point. Maybe we wouldn't have been as far up the table if it hadn't been for some of his performances. Even though he has left me really thinking down about him, and I hate continually going back to it, but I think it is a pivotal point of the season, and that's what we've got wrong, that we've not replaced adequately in a really, really important area of the pitch.
I think that's such a difficult one to replace as well, though, because he had a guy in Tony Watt who, before this season, wasn't scoring regularly, and you know my opinion on him in terms of it took me a long time to warm to him, and then he broke my heart after that. But in the sense that having a regular goal scorer and then Kevin Van Veen scores a brace in the game against Livingston in Boxing Day, you're going into the new year thinking, right, we've got someone there. But even the comeback against Rangers, the changes were to throw Jordan Roberts on as a centre forward. Now, I don't know if you'll disagree. I wouldn't imagine you would, but Jordan Roberts isn't a natural centre forward. We're kind of just—it's not papering over the cracks. We're just experimenting, and hoping for the best type thing.
Right, I'll ask you a question then. What position is Jordan Roberts?
I'd say he's definitely a winger.
What side?
He's a right-sided winger.
I don't know what position he is. I agree with you. I believe that that's his favourite position, but they come on and they're forever interchanging. Some new the more that I'm doing this, the more I'm thinking there's definitely more negatives, definitely 100% more negatives with the way things are going. And some of the performances, like we've said, Ross County, even if you look back to the victories up at Pittodrie, against a poor Aberdeen side, at the end of the day, you can only beat what's in front of you, and the whole point is to score goals, and we've done that. But it seems now that that's stopped, and I don't really know what the answer is. As I was sitting listening to you speaking there, I was thinking about saying we've not made a replacement, so who would I have signed? You know, probably, and I think you'll probably be included in this, I would have went all out and get Kyle Lafferty. Even if it was to the end of the season. Look what he did for Kilmarnock. Nearly single-handedly kept him up. He was a player that I was hoping was going to come in. Not Lee Griffiths, like I said earlier. But Kyle Lafferty, don't we need a day's take away but Kyle Lafferty? Aye, he's a big Rangers fan. So what? I think he would have been the perfect foil, but we kind of lives in the ifs, buts and maybes. He would have done a job until the end of the season.
Well, I'm not. I can't really kind of put my dislike for him aside, to be honest, to really kind of consider that factor. But I don't think he's really set the head of the light in his initial time at Kilmarnock in the Championship so far. So anyway, but that's not really kind of the crux of the matter. Let's try and flip it on its head a wee bit and talk about the positives. We were 2-0 down at half-time against Rangers on Sunday. We came back to draw 2-2. Alexander in the stands, which is maybe another talking point and a side note, but the fact that he made the changes, he went quite bold, because nobody, including you or I, I'm 100% sure about this one, thought that we had any possibility of getting back into the game. We did get back into the game. We showed something. And after the match, I listened to Grant speaking to the manager, and he said that, do you think this is just carrying on the momentum? This team have found their way again and such like. I didn't really kind of think about it at the time, because I got quite caught up in the fact that we'd got a draw at Ibrox. It was the second time we've done that this season. We were 2-0 down, we were dead and buried. We came back and we showed some qualities. Cam Woolery, for me, has been a bit of an enigma in his early stages at Motherwell, but his pace absolutely destroyed Lundstrom at Ibrox. And I was like, okay, right, we've got now back-to-back home games against Ross County and Dundee. We kick on from here. But I think it was obvious to us, after watching all the games that we had went before, that we weren't better. We got lucky. There was two offside goals. One of them, I'm barely sure, should have stood. The other one, the camera angles were just so poor that you couldn't really tell. We were 2-0 down at half-time, coming on 7-0. We performed well to get back into the game, but on another day, it could have been an absolute hiding. It just feels like we're operating game to game rather than having any structure or strategy. The league's that tight that we could be sitting 10th if we lose to Dundee on Saturday and suddenly be looking down the table. I tried to start this point saying I was going to be trying to find the positives. Is Graeme Alexander making the right changes? At times, I know you've said that substitutions can be quite poor, but I'm kind of trying to flip it a wee bit and say he has made good substitutions in these turn games. Or was that just a stroke of fortune?
I mean, at the end of the day, you've got it. Right, the positive that I would take for it is, if you go back to Ross County, you go back to the Dundee game where we won, the games at Pittodrie, a couple of other games that you can fling in there, you can say, oh, we were lucky to win their games, but he comes out in his press conferences, particularly when he's talking to Grant or whoever else, and he'll say, there's many ways to win a game. I think sometimes when if we go in that lead, then he'll manage the game to try and get that one other goal, or he'll manage it to keep that goal. On Saturday, I totally agree. I think that, Sunday, that we, in another day, we could have been onto a hiding. I have to confess, I didn't see the full 90 minutes. I was the Liverpool Cup final. I was dealing with stuff for that. So I never seen the full 90. It was only really the sports scene highlights, and we certainly looked. I watched it back about 4 or 5 times. We could actually have sneaked a win out of it, if we're honest, if we'd taken that third chance. But I spoke to quite a few Rangers fans that were at the game, and they said we were really, really poor, and that was why they were so frustrated that they couldn't put a team that were so poor to bed. But that's what they always say. But at the end of the day, this season, how many games have you actually come away from and you've enjoyed? Aberdeen in the Cup, I thoroughly enjoyed. And it's been the first time in a long time that I've actually enjoyed. This season, I've been quite... I've been to the majority of games. I think I've maybe only missed 3-4 games this season. And there's not been many that I've come out and thought, oh, that was absolutely brilliant. So that's got to be a factor in it. And just another quick point when you said about, I'm not Kyle Lafferty's number one fan, but he scored 5 goals in 6 games. I just checked that whilst you were talking there. So could he have scored 5 goals for us? We'll never know.
You've done me over by the power of Google there. That's a bit disappointing for you there.
I don't want to send you the Kyle Lafferty appreciation. I'm only saying a player like that. That's what we need. We needed somebody who scored at this level, and he's done that. He could have been out. I can't give you another name. That's the only name that I can.
Well, I'll give you a name. Tony Watt. Let's talk about that a wee bit. In terms of, do you think that we've undermined the kind of impact that losing Tony Watt would have? Initially, and it's kind of basing quite a lot of it in social media, which is a dangerous game, but everyone's like, well, do you know what? Fuck him. We'll get on with it. We've got Kevin Van Veen there. But for me, I think that Kevin Van Veen was a far superior player when he had Tony Watt beside him. I think a lot of the dirty work and the dog work that Tony Watt does was so imperative to us. And I think back to games like the kind of scrappy 1-0 against Dundee, the 2-1 against Ross County where he scores the winner, the 1-0 in the really wet, horrible Tuesday night against Dundee United. He was imperative in all these games. And I think that it seems like someone didn't push hard enough with Tony Watt, because I still can't see it. I can't see how it's been presented to him that he's been getting this let's start again. It's been perceived to him that he's going to boost his wages so significantly and Dundee United is a place to be, because he seemed like a settled guy. And there seems to be more to it. And we talked about that at the time when he moved as well. It just felt like there was more to it. But the loss of Tony Watt has been felt so significantly to us. And that's the reason we've not won a league game since the 26th of December of last year. Because we're missing imperative players. But I think Tony Watt, at point of the St Johnstone game prior to Christmas, he was a player at the peak of his confidence. He seemed so happy, so settled. And everything else, I don't know what turned. I don't know what made him head for the exit door. We then rushed through the deal and everything else. And look at the situation with Ricky Lamy now, where we're playing him. Could we have held on to Tony Watt? Because we didn't have a better alternative to him. That for me is mental. Like, you've got an untried American striker. You've got Ross Tierney, who, with all due respect, needs to go away and have one of these summers that Jamie Murphy had, where you just properly work in your physical body strength to the point where you're able to play with men, because you're going to get dominated in Scottish football, and he's not capable of doing that. I'm kind of putting the point across that I think that Tony Watt should have fought to keep him. Instead, we were trying to drive him out the door, and we didn't replace him with anything sort of good enough. Joe Efford was positive when he came off the bench against Celtic, but I think we always give the benefit of the doubt to new players as well. I've not seen anything from him. In fact, the highlight of his middle career was getting hooked at half time at Ibrox, so Woolery could come on and then change the game?
The whole situation, when Tony Watt signs for another club, I wouldn't want to keep him at the club. I understand the only way that I would have done that is if it was not going to one of our rivals. But I don't want to dwell on this whole Tony Watt situation, because we were only a one-man team. But what I'll say is, if you look at if you go back to the game at Tannadice, it feels as if it was so long ago. His performance, he's not just the goal scorer. He's a tighter. We used to get frustrated to an extent with him that you could find him back in the left back position, running the ball back, and then playing it into the midfield, and then before you know it, he's back up in the wing playing the ball in. The first season, we said that the biggest problem is that he wasn't scoring goals, and that seems to be what he's doing now at Dundee United. But he was creating them for other players, whereas I don't see that we've got that. And I've said this right at the start. I think there's more to this story than meets the eye. We can't break the bank for the wage structure. But at the end of the day, there's rumours that he said he wanted the same money as Liam Kelly, and he was refused that. At the end of the day, is that right or wrong? I'm not the type of person that's going to admit that. But for me, one end of the pitch is equally as important to the other end of the pitch. If you don't score at the other end of the pitch, then Liam Kelly can have a shutout for the full season, but we're still not going to win games if you don't score goals. He certainly tried to make out that it's a footballing decision, which we all know is a lot of shite. It's not to do with money. I think that we should have pushed the boat out further. Do I think that we would be in the predicament we're in now if Tony Watt was still there? I don't think that we would have been sitting in fourth position, but I don't think we would be looking in Granty March and Northern winning a league game. So there's a whole load of different points there and different factors. I wouldn't have kept him if he signed for Dundee United. I wouldn't have kept Ricky Lamy. I'd have let him go. I'd have let him sign for Dundee for whatever they offered. I don't think he brings anything that Oyala, Mugabe. We've got Mugabe sitting in the bench. Ricky Lamy's playing. The decisions at the moment are completely wrong.
I did say there that effort. His biggest achievement was coming off for Woolery. Woolery was obviously starting the game. He was replaced by Jordan Roberts. So I'm just kind of correcting my error, my ways there. But in terms of, I think you make so many good points throughout that point that you just made there. But I keep on coming back to this whole pre-contract thing and the fact that we don't seem to be able to compete, really, like, financially. Now, the club AGM was last week. We announced record profits. Great news, of course. The first priority is the longevity of the football club, and you want to be sustainable and be operating within your means. We've had situations in the past where we didn't do that and we got our fingers burnt really badly. We've seen other examples of that backfiring for other clubs as well. But And that's a huge but for me in terms of, we've announced contract extensions for the likes of Scott Fox, a goalkeeper that has never made one appearance for Motherwell. Nathan McGinley, a player that in the last podcast we all unanimously agreed that it possibly would be best for all parties to split ways. Instead, we kind of did a media spin on it and talked about how he's won more aerial duels and made out as if it was real kind of big news for us that we've extended his contract by 2 years. Bevis Mugabe signs a new contract, and that was the first one that I thought, well, okay, right, that is a move that I really kind of approve of. And he's not got a game because a player that's already signed a pre-contract agreement with Dundee is in the starting 11. What are we doing? I can't fathom. And on top of that, the AGM, another bit of kind of headline news from that was $800,000 that we've got to pay for a new pitch, a hybrid pitch that will allow us more commercial opportunities in the sense that we can maybe have Challenge Cup finals, women's internationals, under 21s internationals at Fir Park. Great. If it's to the benefit of the football club, then let's go for it. But to me, it just all cries out that we're cutting back. We're not getting ambition to do it. Scott Fox still wasn't on the bench against Rangers on Sunday. PJ Morrison's went out on loan now to Allo Athletic, so he's now back in the fold. But what's going on? What was the common sense? What were you expecting the reaction to be? And I saw club staff kind of saying that some of the responses to McGinley's contract extension were pretty poor. And I'd never ever advocate people being personal or kind of slaughtering their own, but I just don't really kind of know what the alternative view was. People were obviously going to be a bit dumbfounded by the news that we had extended them, because it should surely be based on performance. And if this is the direction we're going in, we're in for a really torrid time next season.
Listen, for me, I could not believe it when I seen that Nathan McGinley signed. And it's almost like, this isn't a personal attack on the guy. He came across really decent in the video. But I've said before, I could sign a contract with Motherwell, but you wouldn't want to see me playing number 9 with scrubbing my belly across the box. Do you know what I mean? So I just don't understand. Everything seems to be negative at the moment. Whereas before, it didn't feel that long ago that we were super positive. With the whole situation with players signing for teams in the league and pre-contracts, I think the decision's either, obviously financially it made sense to the club, but I would rather just have them sitting in the stand. What happens if we get through against Hibs in the quarter-final? We draw Dundee United, if they get through and Tony Watt scores the winners in the semi-final, they look like fucking idiots. Do you know what I mean? I just don't see why. Just freeze them out. I mean, I just couldn't believe. Again, I want him. Ricky Lammy's made a personal choice for him, and he's perfectly entitled to do that. But why have McGabby sitting on the bench when he's just signed a 2-year deal? Surely you want to form that partnership with Saundry and McGabby or Oyala, who's going to be there for a lengthy period of time. Aye, all right, maybe have Lammy on the bench if somebody gets injured. But surely, God, you've got to think forward and think, like, we can't play him against Dundee. And I know I'm going over old ground, but I've already mentioned this, but fuck me, man, it seems like common sense, and that seems to be what we're lacking.
I quite agree. There's been no joined up thinking happening essentially since the window. Like, January for me is going to be looked back on as a month where our season tipped in the wrong direction. We didn't play a game until what, the 18th or 19th of January. We lost it at Ross County, and you're thinking, well, we brought Jordan Roberts in, who hadn't featured on loan in the first half of the season, we then sign him a permanent deal, but he scores a belting goal, and you think, well, okay, here, we've maybe got something. We lost that game, a game that we had completely in our hands at the point they went down to 10 men, and then it turned, we lose 3-1. And I really kind of think that the warning signs should have been there at that point. We should have been doing business right up until the window, trying to strengthen the squad, trying to look forward rather than looking to almost plug gaps, because that's what Ricky Lammy's in the team for. We can't. Yanni Ayala has been a disappointment. I think I go on record in saying that in terms of, I don't think he's anywhere near as good as we thought we were getting. And there was a reason why we got a Finnish internationalist, because he's injury prone and, quite frankly, he's not very good. But we're constantly having to plug gaps. McGabby dropped out the squad 3 or 4 times over the duration of this 11 or 12 game period that we've had since the turn of the year. And it has been a busy schedule. But at that point, you look at the Championship down south, and so often we always kind of turn our noses up about the EPL and the English leagues and everything else and compare ourselves to them. They play, and from the Championship to League Two, they play Saturday, Tuesday, almost on a weekly basis. And they operate with the same size of squad that we've got. We've got quite an inflated, kind of bloated squad. But they don't make wholesale changes week in, week out. I can't get it. I tell you what, I completely expected that last night. And the more and more people I speak to today, I think people are becoming disillusioned. I kind of tried to ask you the question earlier on. Do you think we're any further forward than we were when Stephen Robinson left?
I think.
Yeah. And in what sense, Pepe? Because I can't see any signs of that.
I think that, well, I think if you look back to the performance against Hamilton Accies, yes, it was Keith that was in charge, but it was Steve Robinson's side. The performance against a really poor Kilmarnock side at Fir Park, I think the performances are far worse. See, last night...
Well, okay, to turn it, we lost 4-1 at Rugby Park. We lost 4-1
at Rugby Park. Wait a minute, though, right? I'm talking about last night, comparing it to other games, right? Last night, we could have... We had the lion's share of the possession. We had chances to minimum get a draw out of that game. We could have snatched it in the last minute. Shield should be scoring. We should have took something out of that game last night. We weren't great. They were probably more hungry than us, but they played us at our own game and had a game plan to stand steady and not take many chances going forward. It was a defensive display. But I think we're in a better position. Your manager doesn't win two Manager of the Month awards. I'm sounding contradictory because I've said some of the performances weren't great, and that's the results. Looking at his win percentage, but there you go. He's in a 40% win ratio. So if we manage to win games and a 40% win ratio compared to what Steve Robinson was, it could only be an improvement. What I'm saying is now, I'm now beginning to think, have we papered over the cracks? I think it's too early to start to say, isn't he? Sorry, we can't say that it's not an improvement because we're further up the league than what we were this time last year. We've been fourth for the majority of the season. So it's easy to jump on the bandwagon than now when we say we're against Ross County. If we could be against Dundee on Saturday, I think there's massive questions. Now you can say, what's the difference between one game? If you lose two games against Ross County and Dundee at home, you're in the middle of March almost, and we're losing games rapidly. We've not won a game all year. That's when it comes to it. So for me, I feel as if I say this every week, Dundee is a pivotal game. These two games, Ross County and Dundee, I had marked as in my head as two home wins. I fully expected us to go against, get into the games, if you look, Rangers, Dundee and Ross County. Minimum 4 points, but I would have expected 6 points. So if we go to Dundee and we get the win, 4 points is what I would have noted in the three games. So I think we're overreacting. Well, I'm not saying things are rosy in the garden. I definitely don't think. I think there's a lot to improve on. But I think where we were with Steve Robinson is a million miles away from where we are just now. Although I think we're getting...
I really do. I genuinely can't see any sort of sign of progress, improvement, and do you know what? We'll go on to preview the Dundee game, and I can absolutely guarantee you, we have got no idea what Graeme Alexander will come up with. There's no direction, and I can kind of almost see. I watched the Class of 92 thing, and I've watched Gary Neville and the overlap saying he regrets sacking Graeme Alexander. I can completely see why people become disillusioned by his ways, because I just think that This is a horrific team to watch. I do not look forward to going to Fir Park on a weekly basis. The novelty of being back at Fir Park is completely worn off. I'm not enjoying it whatsoever. And normally, if I see 11 guys going out there on a weekly basis and doing their all for the team that I love, then I'll always make allowances and everything else. But I just think that we get so carried away by our successes in the early part of the season that we kind of forgot the fact that we weren't very good. We're fucking shit in these Betfred games, and that should have been our Premier Sports Cup, whatever you want to call it. That should have been the warning sign for what was to follow. But you know what? We've had these wee kind of purple patches that have just absolutely papered over what's going on. And we're in bother. We're so, so lucky that we've got a St Johnstone team that haven't invested, a Dundee team that possibly weren't ready to come up, because otherwise we are absolutely dirt. And it goes against what I was saying earlier on about the standard of the league, because you would normally expect a stronger Hibs, a stronger Aberdeen, and they're not very strong just now. But we don't get a positive result on Saturday. We go into the Scottish Cup game and we go out in the quarter-final stage. What's left for Graeme Alexander? I can't see. What happens next? I'd said earlier on in the season that I really didn't have much belief in him. I celebrated the fact that he then signed a contract extension because I thought it was a great bit of business. It seemed like clubs were also kind of clamouring about him and everything else. Would I say that I want him out? No, I definitely wouldn't say that. But again, I'm just so disillusioned by it all and fed up. I almost kind of dread getting in the motor and driving to Fir Park for games. And that's not me. You know how excited we were. We met the first game back and how delirious we were. And that's also owed to the circumstances of Andy's passing last summer and everything. It felt a proper emotional occasion. So much had happened over the pandemic, and again, and it's constantly referenced just now, that there's much more serious things going on in the world. But football was an escape, a release, and we got back. How have we got to 7 months later and been so disillusioned by it? It's frustrating, and I think that boils down to the wrong man in charge, unfortunately.
Listen, I think it's been dreadful, right, over the last wee while. But I think every team is going through spells like this, similarly in the league. Now, I don't know why that is. But see, at the end of the day, Andy, I've just looked at the league table. They have 3 points off of fourth. 3 points. So, if we go and beat Dundee, and results go in our favour, we're back into the top six, and we're talking about it's potentially the wrong manager in charge. I was talking to a St Mirren fan the day, my mate for work, and he'd said that the football under Jim Goodwin had only just really started improving and the squad was starting to improve. And yet he's hailed as the next big thing. If you go through every single team, we obviously had the Livingston final a few weeks ago, and they just grind results out, but they're not a football inside. St Johnstone have been rotten. Hibs have been up and down. Aberdeen have been rotten. And it's just a style of football that seems to be now in modern
day. We had this argument in our group chat earlier on today. When was the last time a Motherwell manager played or a Motherwell team played this style of football so ineffectively like that you can remember?
Steve Robinson.
Towards the end, what happened at the end of that?
What was great about Steve Robinson? Tell me that. We got to 2 cup finals. What else was brilliant? We finished.
The likes of Hasty, Turnbull, Campbell. I think we played some very good stuff. I think after that.
I don't know. I think that Steve Robinson getting to 2 cup finals is totally. Been the kind of a saviour for him. I mean, that season where we we finished above Aberdeen due to the pandemic.
The thing is, like, I can argue the same thing. I think we were poor after the turn of the year there, but at the same time, you can't. The season got curtailed, and we finished third on merit because we were there, and it wasn't as if it was like a situation where you had to kind of go in points per game or anything else. So we finished third because we were third. We played the same amount of games as Aberdeen, and that's how it ended. But
I can't argue with that. But see, at the end of the day,
and the thing is, even in the Thunderdome era and everything else, where we were playing like up and at them football, but we were. I think we were a much more enjoyable team to watch. Certainly don't think we were as bad as a lot of people made out in terms of the style of football either. Like, there was plenty of games. Look back at like the Aberdeen quarter-final in the League Cup. Like, we weren't swashbuckling, free-flowing football, but we were right up and at them. We were a good footballing team with a lot of players that had a lot of ability. Who would you say that? Okay, go through your 1-11 Motherwell team. Consider your 1-11 of this Motherwell team and tell me three players that you think that are very good.
Kevin Van Veen, Liam Kelly, Bevis McGabby. Pretty straightforward.
I think that's a stretch.
What's stretch about it? See, Andrea, the Emerson things are perfect, right? I definitely.
You've got a striker there that plays once in every six games. You've got a goalkeeper that's undoubtedly quality, and you've got a defender that you've named that a year ago, if I had claimed that he was anywhere near decent, you would have laughed me off the podcast.
I totally agree with you there. I can't defend that. That last year, he was shocking. He was a bomb scare. But you can only judge him. I think he's turned a corner. I can't defend Stephen O'Donnell, but I think his performances have been getting worse. I have been a big advocate, and I've had verbal disagreements with fans, but his performances haven't been great. I think Callum Slattery's a good player. I think if we get Kane Woolery playing in the way that he's shown spells of, we can get consistency there. I think it's easy to put the club down, the squad down just now when we're going through a rough spell.
I'm trying very hard not to. As I say, I've got to maintain that degree of objectivity in terms of there's every possibility that the more I get asked to go and speak to someone from our first team squad for the Hibs programme next week. I genuinely don't want to be critical. I don't want to be that guy. I 100% don't want to be that. But at the same time, I think it would be ignorant for us both not to come on this platform and say, this isn't good enough where we're at just now.
Both of you have said it's not good enough, Andy. But this isn't the argument. The argument is we're definitely not good enough. But the argument is that you had said, are we further forward than Steve Robinson?
Yes, I took it on to the next point, though, which was, I don't think man for man the squad's improving either. I just don't.
I don't think that you're going to ever get a time where we're going to have an era where you've got the likes of Darren Randolph's, even if you go to like Chris Humphreys, players like that we had, Ross McCormick, Chris Porter's, players like that.
Is that not what our mantra was? Under Robinson, I can remember listening to Stephen A. Smith. Just added Stephen A. Smith to my shopping list. Shut the fuck up, Alexa. Go away. Alexa, off. Permanently. I can remember Stephen A. Smith talking after he did commentary on the Dundee game in the Scottish Cup. Chris Long scores the hat trick, and he said that he was with him at Everton, and he was like a rough diamond. He was a player that kind of lost his way, went down to the lower leagues in England, and then came back up, and it was an opportunity for him to move on and to do better. Is that model been kind of just abandoned almost? Because we're now signing players onto 2 and 3 year contracts, expecting much more than we get from them.
I'm not really sure what you were meaning by the point with Chris Long. But at the end of the day, we were all...
What do you mean by that?
I didn't quite follow what you were saying, what model it was with Chris Long was here to...
Our model was to essentially get guys that had lost their way in the game a wee bit and bring them on and redevelop them and then sell them on profit.
Well, that worked out well with that, eh? He went to Crewe.
Well, exactly. He ended up leaving Motherwell at the end of the season. Couldn't get a team and then going back to Motherwell.
But that's what you're saying, like Steve. That was a Steve Robinson saying.
Was that not the Martin Foyle type way that we targeted players down south? Jermaine Seedorf had lost his way. Jermaine Hilton had lost their way. But at least I could see a wee bit of direction in the way that we're buying. What are we doing now?
I've not got an answer for that at all. But the question that's brought this kind of almost debate. Listen, I'm not happy with the football just now. Absolutely not. I've not enjoyed it. I think there's been far more games where we've been poor than there has been when we've been good. There's been very few times that I've went and come away buzzing for the football. Actually, what a difference it makes to your weekend when your team goes out and puts a performance in. And that's the only time that I can think that was against Aberdeen. But whether or not it's just that I'm getting older now and I'm just... I don't know. That it's just what I'm used to. Unfortunately, I think... I don't know what the answer is. At the end of the day, you asked me earlier on, I'd be in a better position than what we were when Steve Robinson left the club. And the answer is, we're 3 points off of fourth. Do we deserve to be there? No. But at the end of the day, it's a results-driven business. And the result of that could be that we're in the top six after Saturday's, if we fully expect to stick out and beat Dundee at home.
Let's go on and appreciate we're now over the hour mark, so I need to be a wee bit careful for time. We've brushed over quite a lot of games because I think we're both kind of in a state of high emotion at this moment in time. But let's look to Saturday's game against Dundee. It's going to be a game that will be kind of highlighted by the fact that Mark McGee will be in the Dundee dugout, a manager that's without doubt for me the most divisive character that's ever taken charge of the club. We did so on two occasions. They are absolutely desperate for points, rooted to the bottom spot in the Premiership table at this moment in time. You've mentioned that you do this quite a lot, to be fair, that you talk about looking at the fixture list and you maybe mark beside it, that'll be 3 points, that'll be a draw, and you kind of calculate where we're going to be come the end of the season. Dundee, I would imagine, is a game that you would have 3 points put beside without even looking at their squad. But we've narrowly beaten them at home. We were absolutely tonked against them in the league in November. We lost to them in the League Cup. This isn't going to be the straightforward fixture that we would aspire to at this moment in time, because we need one that's just a gimme that we can get 3 points and hopefully propel us into these last three games prior to the split. But I'm finding it hard to really call it, to be honest with you.
Listen, I maybe didn't quite articulate what I was trying to say. I do think that there's been good points. There's been more bad points for Graeme Alexander coming in, but I think that's just part and parcel of Motherwell. I really do. I think as a Motherwell supporter, I'm realistic, and I think the most important thing is that we stay part of the SPL, and that is anywhere 10th and above. At the moment, I'm happy that Graeme Alexander's our manager. However, there does become a time in a season or a manager's tenure where you think, you know what, I'm not sure about this. And the time for me was when Robinson's reign was the Hamilton Accies performance, sorry, the
performance at home. I think that was his last game, if I'm not wrong. And at that point, I thought, you know what, I'm not really sure here. I still didn't think he would go. And I think I will then start to change my mindset if we go out on Saturday and don't put in a performance. Now, that sounds as if I'm backtracking to what our kind of slight debate was earlier on. I'm not. At the moment, I think we're going through a poor rut. I think we're like any other football supporter that it doesn't feel like that long ago that you and I were super positive and delighted that he signed his new contract. And football's is almost like a week-to-week basis with moves. And I do think this is a really pivotal game. You're 100% right with regards to me having this as 3 points. I can't see anything else than us getting beat. If we go out and put in a similar performance as what we did against Ross County, it's then that I need to question the manager. We've not scored enough goals, particularly at home. We've said that papering over the cracks quite a few times in this. Is the cup papered over the cracks? I read some on Twitter saying they mentioned that this was sacking material, the run of results that we're on. And I kind of thought, aye, right, give us a break. But then when you actually look at it, if we get beat with Ross County and Dundee at home, alarm bells are really, really starting to ring. At the same time, we win that game and results go away, you could be sitting sixth, fifth, probably not fourth. And things look completely different. I think it's such a pivotal, pivotal game, but I do fully expect us to win. I think you'd get more chance of getting the 5 or 6 numbers in the lottery than picking what the starting 11 is going to be, because I, for one, have got no idea. I'll quickly go back to the Rangers game. The starting 11, I could not believe it. And then it quickly got changed. So I've got no idea what the starting team is going to be. Another thing that I don't listen to is his press conferences anymore. Maybe sometimes after the game. I think he can be quite honest after the game. I don't think he's honest before the game, which really frustrates me, and I've said that a few times. If we go and get beat against Dundee, I think the next conversation that we have in this podcast, the two of us will be completely in agreement. Well, I'll certainly have been saying I'm really starting to be concerned. What happens if we go out against Dundee and we don't have a good performance, but we sneak him in? What do we do there?
I guess we do what we've done for the majority of the season, where we get a wee bit carried away. I know I keep on putting things on you here, and we do, for anyone that's listening, we do tend to kind of plot the route of our podcast, but do you think that's changed in the fact that people's reaction to performances has changed because they can see every game? And what I mean by that is saying, like, for example, on Sunday, I didn't go to the game, but I was able to watch it live. If I don't go to an away game, I'll still get to catch the 90 minutes. Whereas previously, if I don't choose to pay my 23 or 24 quid, I don't see the game. And it's almost a kind of consequence. So you're getting to see so much more football just now as well. Like, do you think that's maybe altering people's view and where Motherwell are at? Because as much as I'm quite critical of the manager and the style of football at this moment in time, I would kind of say that it's not drastically worse than quite a lot of Motherwell teams that I've seen over my lifetime.
No, I mean, I'll go back to it, and I think there's a whole load of factors. I think things have changed dramatically because there's more than just being able to watch football all the time. Your social media, that you can sit in the stand and put your frustration on, which will then get a debate. There's podcasts where you and I are coming on and talking, and people are listening, probably which will disagree with my views. And I think that, but at the same time, I'm not saying for 1 minute that it's acceptable, the performance that we've seen recently? Absolutely not. I just think it's too early to doubt the manager. That's what I'm saying. But to try and put a point on what you're saying, I think things, football has moved on, as has kind of for this time 10 years ago, things are completely different. The formations are different. The style is different. The tolerance for the referees are different. The rules are different. But we could go into a whole new debate with VAR coming in. I think this season, if VAR was in, we would have been in a far more favourable position. But listen, Motherwell will always have a special place in my heart, as will be with you. I just don't get as frustrated. At the end of the day, the one thing that I do agree with the manager is that the table doesn't lie, and we can only really judge it at the end of the season. But at the moment, we're 3 points off the four. I've just had a quick look at the fixtures there. I see this regular. So if you get into our next batch of fixtures, if you take away...
Either move towards your microphone or move away from it, because you're recording.
So basically, the next lot of fixtures. So with Ross County at home, add us down for 3 points. Dundee at home, 3 points. Quarter final of the cup could go anyway. St Johnston v Motherwell. St Johnston, you would take a draw in that. Motherwell at home, a St Mirren, a win. Motherwell away to Livingston, a win or a draw. So the next few games are going to be pivotal to Graeme Alexander's reign. And I think it's too early at the moment, when we're 3 points off a third, which people will be sick of me saying, to say that we need to potentially change the manager at this stage. I think when we get to the split on the 9th of April, which is a month away, that's when we're either up shit street or things are looking far more favourable. If you look at Livingston's season, they had a horrendous start to the season, and they've now been beginning to put results together, and they're sitting in fourth position. Could I see us being sitting back in fourth position by the time they're playing Livingston? My heart says yes. My head says probably not. But I don't think that we'll be in 10th.
Okay, mate. Well, that's us an hour and 15 minutes into this. And yeah, it's been a lot to digest, because obviously we've had a wee bit of a break with the podcast, given to personal circumstances. You maybe hear in the background there's a wee bit of noise. Mrs. has got COVID, but seems to be absolutely right as rain at this moment in time. You've got your Zambia trip. Let's finish on a positive note. And I can't even begin to describe how proud I am of the work that you've put into this project, something that was born 2.5 years ago and was obviously delayed through the pandemic. It's now very much a thing. You're 2 weeks away from setting off. So much support from Motherwell supporters, from the wider football community. It's something that's grown arms and legs from you watching The Last King of Scotland and feeling a wee bit kind of, I need to do something more. I know it also kind of relates as well to losing your dad and just wanting to have a legacy for your kids. As I say, extraordinary work and something that I feel has been, I can't wait to see you get all the credence for and the respect, because I know how humble a guy you are and how much work you've put into things. You never ever expect anything from anyone, but I would kind of like you to take this opportunity to give a wee bit of background as to what you're doing and what the next couple of weeks hold for you.
It has been a long time coming, to be honest. I put my life and soul into it pre-pandemic, and I just felt that inside, I was absolutely devastated, but at the time there was more important things going on round about me, and I include that to my wife who worked in the COVID ward at Wishaw General throughout it. So I've seen it firsthand that there was more important things, but I still kept it at the back of my mind, and I knew that I had a big charity night and I raised $6,000, that you were there, and it was proud that all of my close friends and family and people that I didn't even know turned up, and I've really captured the what my vision was and is. But if you fast forward to December, you wrote a great article, and I can't thank you enough for that. It sounds like we've had a big argument earlier on, and now we're kind of a high-fiving each other fair far. But the article in the programme really was so accurate. So if you go back to December, we weren't even at the football. So I had booked my flights coming back from Tannadice and Jim Frame's bus for this March, December. I never even thought about it through Christmas and probably the majority of January. And you get into the kind of start of February, and it then starts to look like I'm going. So I mean, in total, over the 3 years, I've sent over 950 kilos of football equipment, so 50 kilos off a ton of football equipment, and it's such a humbling feeling knowing that you've done that. So it's 2 weeks on Saturday that I go. I could spend another 2 hours thanking everybody that's contributed, liked a tweet, liked a Facebook post, or give me a pair of boots. I think the last count that I stopped counting, I think there was 2,000 pairs of boots going out. So it has been a long time coming. It's something that I'm passionate about. Been in the local schools recently, something that I never thought I would do, and thoroughly enjoyed it. But obviously, the I'm looking forward to turning a wee bit of Zambia into a kind of claret and amber day. And hopefully anybody that's listening will see that this covered in social media. We'll have a day where I'll be giving out all the Motherwell strips that I've collected. I'll get some old retro ones taken out as well. So it'll be great. But the important thing is that it's my love of football that's influenced this. And I want to be able, if it's one kid that benefits out of me going out there, then it's going to be worthwhile. But hopefully we'll be able to do a podcast for while I'm over there and keep you up to date with what I'm doing. But again, a general thanks to everybody that showed any sort of interest in it. And what I would say to anybody that's listening, that I don't like to say I'm not a charitable person, but this is something that I've never thought I would do. And loads of people said I would love to do that. And I would just say to some, see if people want to do it. I don't think this will be the only time that I'm going. See you next time. Send me a message on Twitter or Facebook, or if you know who I'm at Fir Park, come up and speak to me. And I would love for it to be going forward something that becomes maybe not every year, every second year. Because I've speaking to somebody today and they say it's going to be a life-changing experience. That's not why I'm going. I'm going because I want to spread my love of football and see the joy in these kids and adults' faces. As I said, I could sit and talk about it all night, and I know how to bore people, but I'll keep you updated. And thanks to you personally for everything that you've done to help. As I said, there's far too many people to thank, but hopefully you'll see some good stories coming out and some positivity rather than listening to my negative ramblings tonight.
First and foremost, it's the very least that I could do is, in terms of the podcast itself as an entity, I'm just remarkably proud of your efforts, mate. We all wish you all the best, and hopefully we can do that podcast from Zambia with the Motherwell Supporters Club Zambia Foundation that will be established in the very near future. We've had our ding-dongs tonight. It's been a bit intense at points, but thank you very much for your time tonight, mate.
No problem. I'm looking forward to getting the away strip, the full kits, the 1992 kits, getting a squad picture of that. I think that'll be one of my favourite moments when I go over there. So thanks again. And I think it's always good to have a nice debate. It's not always going to be the best of listening when we sit and agree with each other. So it's good to vent your frustrations.
Yeah, that's it. We had a bad result last night, and I think that the majority of people would have come home and felt quite frustrated and maybe kind of used different outlets to vent those frustrations. So that's exactly what we're doing tonight. And as you've heard, we don't agree on everything, but that's just part of life. Thanks again, mate.
Cheers.
You've been listening to MFC Podcast. We'll be back following the game against Dundee. Let's hope that it's in much more positive circumstances. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
You've always been one to talk, and now it's over, that it's a lot to pick apart, to swallow.
My friend's got a head disease. My friend's got a head disease.